This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Media Explode, episode 44, ranking the best picture nominees.
You get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose.
Hello, welcome to my Fanboy Media Explode. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Josh Lanigan.
Hey there.
And Ron Richards.
Happy New Year.
Still? Happy New Year, everybody. Sure, why not?
Yeah. I like how that was clearly like the very last thing that came to your mind. It was like, exactly. Happy New Year. And then it was the quick like inventory of, all right, okay, it's not so bad.
When can you stop saying that?
I mean, ideally, I think January 15th is really, like, yeah, Martin, I think like, we're like MLK, like around there. That's
so you're like 3 weeks late on that.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I haven't talked to you guys since the holidays, so.
It's fair.
We just talked 3 days ago.
Like yesterday.
48 hours ago.
When he said that, though, I just accepted it.
Like, exactly. You're like, yeah, okay.
So this is the iFanboy Media Explode show, unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. Thanks, patrons, and thanks for being patrons. And if you've ever thought of being one, please consider today. This is our monthly show in which we talk about non-comic book media as opposed to our regular podcasts that are all comic-focused over at ifanboy.com. We got a lot to go through today, so let's just jump in. Ron, why don't you lead us off with what you've been enjoying since we talked last?
Well, it's funny because we were in one of the times when we were talking recently, Josh, I believe you were lamenting that there's just too much damn stuff to watch on the TV.
There's too many damn TV shows.
Too many damn TV shows. And I do find myself in that position now, or after the post-holiday drought, you know, after catching up on everything we were watching and we were like, you know, we were grasping at straws of things to watch. And now our cup runneth over. And actually, like, I've, you know, we're in the midst of a couple of like really, really meaty and really, really good things. First, I feel like we gotta mention, we just got a drinking game, check the box, whatever, but Slow Horses continues to be fantastic. We just finished season two, so we're going to start season three soon, but we want to wait a little bit because we want to balance it out until season, you know, cause season four is coming this summer. Right. Anyway. Fantastic show. But in terms of filling in that Perry Mason shaped hole in our heart, I was delighted to see that AMC has Monsieur Spade. Are either of you watching the show? Or?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Good. Okay, cool. Josh, have you heard of it?
Never even heard of it, but I would like to lodge a complaint about your pronunciation of Monsieur.
Monsieur Spade.
Monsieur Spade. Josh, what if I told you Tom Fontana from Oz fame? And the guy, Scott, who is it? Scott?
Scott Frank.
Scott and Frank. Levinson. And but, yeah,
Scott well, Frank Levinson who did that. It. Yeah, yeah. But, was it God? It was a Western.
He did the Queen's Godland? Gambit, and he did God. Did he do Godless?
Godless.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He directed every episode. Yeah. Of this.
So him right. and he and Tom Fontana have teamed up to do the character Sam Spade, made famous by Humphrey Bogart in the Maltese Falcon film, to tell a story of later in Sam Spade's life. In the it begins in the mid 50s, and then the show actually takes place during the early 60s, where Sam Spade has settled down in the French countryside and gets thrown into a local. I don't know, mystery.
It's a complex mystery involving the Algerian War, World War II, and murdered nuns, and code-breaking, and British spies. Jeez.
Honestly, so Clive Owen is in the lead role, and he's playing Sam Spade, and he's doing a wonderful thing in where he's not doing a Bogart impression, yet he's inheriting the space of Sam Spade, of the character of Sam Spade, making it his own. But but it still feels familiar of the Dashiell Hammett, kind of like, like we know, like there's so much Sam Spade in our, I mean, I don't know if there is any more, but at least I think amongst us.
I don't feel like I'm getting it from all sides.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like growing up with like Bugs Bunny doing it, you know what I mean? Like this is one of the great American characters.
I know what it is without ever having known what it was.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Connor, what do you think? We've been loving it. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I'm really loving it. It's been coming out in conjunction with True Detective meeting. It's on the same night, same time, and there's both six episodes, so you're getting the same sort of beats. But yeah, Clive Owen's a huge Bogart fan. He's a huge Maltese Falcon fan, but he's definitely not doing – he's talked about this. He's not doing an impression, as Ron said. But he feels like a tough guy from the 40s who is now settled into – a case has brought him to France in the 50s. He ended up staying there for reasons that they show in the show, and he lives there.
Yeah.
And so it's shot in France. Most of the cast is French. It's mostly in French.
In fact, one of the guys in the show is from that Drops of God show I talked about last episode, where they were like, oh, there's only a handful of French actors apparently that can work in TV.
It's a wine show. If it takes place in France, there's going to be crossover. Yeah,
exactly.
So it's interesting because like it's on AMC, but it feels like it was made for streaming because the commercial breaks, at least for me, come at odd times in the scenes. There's cursing, there's nudity. Like, whoa, we're on basic cable.
Yeah, I'm watching it streaming. I haven't even noticed that because I didn't even realize it was on regular AMC. I thought it was just on AMC streaming, but yeah, so.
Yeah, it's weird. There's the scene where the woman's walking around topless, and I'm like, wait a minute, bro, this is basic cable.
Yeah.
But they're not redoing the Maltese Falcon. They're not, he doesn't walk around with a fedora.
Yeah, and it loosely ties to the, I would say legend, but to the mythos. Yeah. Like it mentions some characters. So if you know Maltese Falcon, you'll be like really into it. But if you don't know it, you don't need to watch it, you've never even need to watch Maltese Falcon at all. If you just want a period piece detective, kind of thing, it's very, very good. It's very.
And he
well
feels
done.
Like a character from the era, even though he also feels like a character from that era who has grown 20 more years.
What's interesting is that there's one scene where he's going to get his gun out because he, in which, case in point, he doesn't carry a gun anymore. Like he's living this provincial life now on this like estate on a vineyard and married this woman and swims naked. Like it seems like he has reached contentment. Right. And then all the stuff from the past comes back and it doesn't pull him back in, but it pulls him back into the life. And so he goes into his closet to get his gun. And the gun is in a box with a suit and a jacket and the fedora. And he pauses. And when he's putting it away, he's holding the fedora and he pauses for a second. You see, do I put it back on? And he's like, no, I'll leave it off. But like the fact that he's not in that gumshoe mindset anymore, I thought that like, and there are just little subtle ways that Clive Owen is playing it that speak to it. And the dialogue and the banter, the writing, like you can tell that Fontana and the other guy, Scott Frank, are just having a blast, like playing Dashiell Hammett.
It's also funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. This definitely, you're right. Like this is kind of, it's a two sides to a very odd coin between what's going on True Detective currently and this. But I actually feel like this is more of a, like I said, filling the void of Perry Mason. Mm-hmm. In that, the period mystery kind of thing, very noirish, but like French. And so,
unique, it's this classical American character in France in the 60s. Yep. Like that's not a story I've ever seen before.
Yeah, it's an interesting angle to take for sure.
Yeah.
So we've been enjoying that. And then I don't typically buy into the Ryan Murphy oeuvre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know America Horror Story and like all the like all these franchises that he has built over the past couple of years. And one of them is the Feud series, where I guess last year was what was it? It was
the one about Hollywood.
Wirehangers.
Yeah.
Joan Crawford versus Crawford.
Betty Davis.
Betty Davis, yeah, exactly. I didn't watch that one, but my wife saw that the second season of Feud came out, and it's Truman Capote versus the Swans. And it's telling the tale of Truman Capote and his falling out with New York society in the 70s when he decides to write a tell-all and tell all the secrets of all the ladies that he was had befriended over the years in New York society. So my wife wanted to watch it. I'm like, fine, I'll watch it. This has just been gripping because I did not know it was directed by Gus Van Sant.
Yeah, every episode.
Which, yeah, when we were watching the first episode and the credits came up, I was like, directed by Gus Van Sant. I was like, what? And I looked and I'm like, oh, he just did the first episode. But no, he did the whole series, which is great. Tom Hollander, who I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah, I love him.
Most recently was in The White Lotus season 2 in Italy. But, you know, he was in The Loop, you know, in Iannucci stuff. And, you know, and like.
He's a British, that guy.
Yeah, he's great. He's fantastic. He's playing Truman Capote and doing a great job of inhabiting that whole mythos. And this is a whole, you know, I know about Truman Capote. I knew about In Cold Blood. I knew about, you know, Breakfast at Tiffany's, yada, yada. Did not know about this. Have no idea about this. So, again, another period piece taking place in New York. We see that, you know, New York in the 50s and the 60s and 70s as it's jumping around time. Bill Paley of the Paley Center for Media, formerly of CBS. His wife plays a big role. The cast is stacked. I mean, Naomi Watts, Diane Lane.
Calista Flockhart, Demi Moore.
Molly Ringwald. Yeah. Like a great, really great cast. And it's just been, you know, very, very chew the scenery drama.
Chloe Sevigny.
Yeah. But it's been a fun one to watch.
Yeah. I've been really enjoying it. I'm the same as you. I don't normally watch Ryan Murphy shows, but I did like the last Feud. That was really terrific.
Oh, yeah.
So this particular franchise he has, I like. The only negative I have about it is I think it jumps around in time too much.
Oh, I like it that. I don't mind that.
60s to the 70s to the 80s back to 60s. Like, it's just constantly bouncing, and it's a hard time holding on to what you're looking at any given moment. But other than that, I'm really enjoying it.
Well, yeah. Well, it was funny because the first episode did a lot of unpacking to set the scene. And there was a lot of like jumping around time to like show you what the relationships were and like and kind of build the board. The second episode settled in one period of time. There was no time jumps in the second episode.
Yeah.
Third episode, time jumps again. Right. Yeah. No, I thought it was very, very good. So it's one that we'll continue to be watching. And then talk about stack cast. The last one I'm watching, which Amazon did a binge dump, which I'm just baffled by because I have no idea why, because of all shows that are like very well crafted television that's made for weekly viewing. Mr. Smith is fantastic. And Mrs. Smith, right?
It is interesting they did that, isn't it? Because
it is, yeah.
That's a show that is now going to fall off the cultural radar.
Exactly. And like the thing is, it's really good. So this is, if you're not aware of it, it's on Amazon Prime. It is a reimagining of the Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie movie that came out 20 years ago now. And the premise of that movie was that they were both assassins and they were married to each other and did not know that each other was an assassin. And then in the movie, they find out about each other and then, you know, hilarity ensues. This kind of turns that concept.
Sexy hilarity.
Yeah. This kind of turns the concept 90 degrees. And the show starts with both of them being recruited by whatever weird secret spy organization that they're working for and being paired up and going into it. They both know that they're both assassins and they're pretending to be married and they're pretending to live with each other in a very, very nice apartment in New York City, which me and my wife are like, what neighborhood is this in? Like, we're trying to figure it out.
The great mystery of television is always New York City apartments.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like, it is a constant.
Yeah.
If you know anything about New York City apartments at all, then that is the biggest hurdle to get over your disbelief.
Yep, exactly. And so they move in together in this amazing apartment. And then each episode is a, you know, is a mission per episode, right? And so there's a, you know, so it's a little, I don't say bottle episode because that's a different meaning, but like singular, you know, kind of monster of the week episode.
Just single episode.
Yeah. And what we're doing
episodic.
What we're doing is we're actually watching the two main characters. Sorry, Donald Glover plays Mr. John Smith and Maya Erskine plays Mrs. Smith, Mrs. Jane Smith. It was originally supposed to be Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and she dropped out, unknown why. We keep trying to imagine if it was Phoebe Waller-Bridge, whether it be better or worse. And I actually think
she did some interviews when the show came out. But
sure, yeah. But
they had different visions of the show.
Right, but you wonder if it will be less than because the original person dropped out. But like Maya Erskine is owning it and doing a great job bringing her own kind of flavor to it. And it's really interesting to see, you talk about like on-screen chemistry, there are sparks. Like, and that's what you need for this, is that the idea is that if you've got these two assassins who don't know each other, who are pretending to be married and they have to do these missions, inevitably, what is their relationship going to be like? And over the span of these episodes, they go from being strangers to, you see their relationship develop, and there's definite chemistry on screen. Donald Glover is very good. Like, I've forgotten how good he can be. Like, it's a, you know, different kind of character, different than I've seen him do. And they stack every episode is a different, not a cameo, but like the second episode, the target was John Turturro. Right. It's we love John Turturro, right? It's fantastic. So like every episode has a different casting, similar to like what Poker Face did when Poker Face was doing each episode being one and done. But like Judith Light was in an episode she won an Emmy for, and you know, like, Tom Waits. Who's the guy? Old grizzly guy.
Tom Holland.
Tom Stoppard.
Oh, it's going to drive me crazy.
Tom Petty.
No. What is his name?
Tom Davis.
Tom, no, I don't think there's a Tom.
Jefferson.
Cruz.
yeah. Was it Cruz? It was Cruz?
No, it wasn't Cruz.
Tommy Davidson from In Living
Nick
Color.
Nick Nolte. That's who it was. Nick Nolte. That's who it was.
Almost Tom.
I'm sorry. Nick Nolte to Tom Waits. That's not a far jump.
No, it's not. They both.
Yeah, thank you.
They've both been through the ringer.
Yeah, the grizzly. It was like, the grizzly voice that got me. Really.
You
yeah.
looked and sounded 80 since you were 25.
Exactly,
kind of thing. I'll give you that.
Anyway, so Mr. and Mrs. Smith is. I recommend you guys both really watch it. It's
Ron, there's too many damn shows.
There are too many damn shows. But this one actually is really good.
Actually, mathematically speaking, there's a lot less shows. There's 25% fewer shows.
Well, there's too many shows.
Than last year.
That I want to watch that I can't get through right now. Yeah. That's what there is.
Well, you're watching so much basketball.
I would put this on your list because the premise is interesting. The execution is stellar. They film in New York, they spared no expense. and it's, I mean, it, you know, and each episode is like between, you know, 40 minutes and 50 minutes. Like, they're not like full hour. Right. And so like, there's a lot of talk about the end of peak TV and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
This very much feels like this is what TV was supposed to be during this period. Like, this is what we were supposed to, like, this is the kind of show I would expect. Like, this is, it's fantastic. I strongly recommend it.
I don't know why they released them all at once. It's so strange.
It's so weird. This could be a show everyone's talking about on a weekly basis. If they did that, if they did a weekly release,
it wouldn't feel like there was too many damn shows. If it was like that,
yeah,
you would feel like that's good.
There's something to say. Like, I'm all like, I embrace disruption. Like, you know, break the system, do stuff. But there's also something to say said about institutions that work. Right. And I'm a strong believer in weekly episodic television. Like, that there's something that spending a week waiting for the next episode and talking about it you know, like what's been going on with True Detective recently, I think is a great example, you know.
And Monsieur Spade, like the same thing. Like, there's a mystery that I think about throughout the week until we get to the showtime. It's like, oh, it's Sunday, it's time for the new episode. It's as opposed to, you know, binging it on your own time at your own pace. You don't talk to about anybody with anybody else. You don't feel connected to an audience because everyone's watching things their own time. Like,
Well, that's a good segue to Connor, to your what you've been watching.
Well, yeah, just to get the quick one out of the way. So Curb Your Enthusiasm is back for its final season.
I was throwing you a segue to True Detective,
I
sir.
Know, but I'm trying to get the fast one out of the way. Curb is back. It's the final season. One of the best shows, best comedies of the last, you know, 20 years. I don't know why they're doing it all in Atlanta right now, at least the first two episodes. But I don't think we've ever had a show like this that's taken place intermittently for like a generation that just sort of
25 years.
Whenever
that's
he wants
crazy.
To do a season.
The first one was 1999, right? Like,
it's weird. It's like season 12 out of 25 years. And so it's just like, whenever he wanted to do it, he did it. And so we followed this guy's life. He's, you know, when he started, he was in his 50s. Now he's almost 80.
Jeez.
And it's just a very unusual thing we've had. And I'm sure Ron heard this, but I was listening to the episode of The Town talking about the premiere, and they made a really good case that, you know, awards-wise, you know, everyone loves The Bear. The Bear's great. The Bear swept all the comedy Emmys in the last ceremony. I wouldn't call The Bear a comedy, though.
Yeah, that's
and
the real...
And Curb Your Enthusiasm is a straight-up fucking comedy.
Yep.
And so is Abbott Elementary, and I haven't seen that, but people love it. But, like, the shows like,
Barry, a drama.
They put it in the 30-minute category. They put it in comedy. Barry gets put in the comedy category. Like, it's not a comedy either.
Barry's not a comedy. Is there a genre for fucked up but kind of funny?
They're almost going to have to add like a dramedy category.
I would definitely, it's all about like the spectrum or like the balance. And like, I definitely think The Bear is funny at times, but is more dramatic than not. You know what I mean? Like
I wouldn't even think to call that a comedy.
Yeah.
Well, one best comedy a month ago. So anyway, the point is, this is a straight up pure, there's nothing dramatic about Curb other than what is he going to do to fuck it up this time? It's been funny. Even if I don't think these two episodes have been the greatest of Curb episodes of all time. I thought the premiere was kind of okay. The second episode was better. But I just will be sad when it's gone because there's nothing else like it on TV. And it's allowed all of these great comedians for 25 years to flourish in this unique production style. I mean, you know, you've had so much great, you know, who thought Richard Lewis would come back and do great stuff? Or Bob Einstein before he passed away. All these great comedians who were people that you had to really, really be fans of comedy to really know of sort of flourished in these shows. Susie Essman, who was brought on as a day player for her first episode and now is, you know, an integral part of the show. It's been terrific, and I'm sad to see it ending soon. But
yeah,
we'll enjoy it as it goes. So let's talk about True Detective, as Ron said. So True Detective, which is subtitled Night Country, but really it's just True Detective Season 4. It's back, baby. Season 1 was terrific. Season 2 was terrible. Season 3, I thought, was better.
I don't remember a thing about it.
Neither does Mahershala Ali. That was the whole issue. Yeah.
About memory.
Yeah, he had a bad memory, and so the unreliable narrator season.
Oh, right. Yeah,
he was a detective desperately trying to solve a case before he had Alzheimer's. I thought it was solid. But they jettisoned this showrunner. It's no longer Nick Pizzolatto. It's now a Mexican filmmaker.
Isa Lopez.
It's set in Alaska during the long night. There's no daytime. Which I keep forgetting. And I'm like, everything's happening at night. No shit.
They were in the high school at one point. And I was like, go to high school at night? And I was like, no, it's always night. And I went, oh, right. Then there's one bit where they're driving and the sun is sort of coming up a little bit. And I was like, is the night over? And then I was like, oh, I bet it just barely comes up and then goes away again. And that's
They did a good job of telling you what day it was and like how many days into night it was. But like, I would have liked a time because like when someone calls and they're like, oh, like, is it bedtime? Is it morning?
That's the point though, because
it's overwhelming
and it's so disconcerting and your expectations are all off. And I think that's the point. You don't really know where you are.
It's always the same, right? Mm-hmm. It's just always the same. So this one, Jodie Foster is the lead with Kali Reese, who I think is terrific as her partner, her reluctant partner.
She's amazing.
It's like her first thing, I think, right?
Yeah. She was acting in one other thing, but she's a boxer. Yeah. What's funny is that at one point I go, she's from Boston, and then they kind of explained it. And I was like, okay, good. You do have to address the fact that she's clearly not a native Alaskan speaker.
You know, this one is tied tangentially in season one. It's much more supernatural, seems to be. But I think it all works with the story they're telling, with the community they're dealing with, sort of very tied into the native culture.
It's playing more into the horror angle than season. Like season one was like
this gothic horror,
detective mystery, whatever, with like supernatural on the fringes. And in this one, supernatural is closer to the center.
I'm still hoping that's just a red herring.
Yeah,
that this will not be supernatural. I'll accept it, but
yeah. Well, I mean, and part of it, I mean, is because they're in the night country, they're at like the edge of the world, right? And so, like, is this more, you know, apt to, you know, if there are people drilling into the ice and into the crust, are you going to unleash something? Like, it's going to happen there versus Louisiana.
Ron and I are old Twin Peaks fans, so we're much more apt to think that these things happen in the edges of the world.
And don't question them. Don't question them.
But there was the explanation, they're looking for some like super bacteria that's a panacea that's going to cure everything. And I was like, okay, that could make people act crazy.
Yeah.
There could be all kind of reasons for hallucinations. We just don't know we don't know yet. Josh is behind. We're at episode 5 of 6. When this comes out, there'll be one episode left. Josh is only 2 in, so he hasn't gotten quite as far.
That might be 3.
5 brought the heat, right, Connor?
Yeah, no, this I think it's been terrific. Yeah. I've seen some bad reviews. I don't care. I don't agree with them. It doesn't matter. I think Jodie Foster has been great. She's really compelling. It's a character she's she does amazing. Not play at all.
Yeah. No.
She's playing an asshole. Like she's playing
and like full on. And also, it's a thing, but like she's aged naturally.
Yes.
In a way. And it's so strange to look at a woman like her age, but she's not entirely real. And she's also entirely Jodie Foster. It's not like, she's gotten old. It's like, no, she's right there. She's still got like that same spark in her eyes.
I want to just clarify for your sake that it's not strange to look at a woman that age. It's strange to look at a woman that age in Hollywood who hasn't had work done.
That's what I mean.
Right. Yeah. I'm clarifying it so you don't get letters.
I just mean that because there's so many people who are defying that, and she is just, it's whatever she is. And I think it really lends to her. She's fantastic and surprised me, which it shouldn't be because she's, a longtime pro. But I was like, look at that screen presence. It's crazy.
Right. And it's a show that when Sunday at, I think it's 6 o'clock or whatever it is, comes on, like I'm ready. I'm on the couch. Like I'm excited. I'm sad. It's only 6.
Yeah, I thought it was 8. Like I heard someone refer to it as the penultimate episode, episode 5. I'm like, what? No, I don't want to be over. Like, yeah,
no, that's so. Okay.
Yeah, damn shows. It's too much
that,
to watch.
You know what? That just you said that, and I was like, oh, thank God.
So, I'm really loving it. I really am. I mean, between True Detective and Mr. Spade, and then Curb on Sunday nights, it's a good night.
Yeah, Sunday TV's back, everybody.
It's back, and then John Oliver. You got 4 solid shows.
Yeah,
on Sunday nights. Also, 60 Minutes, but I'm the only one who watches that. Anyway, Masters of the Air is another show that is shorter than you'd hope it would be. It's 9 episodes instead of 10. It's the third part of the Band of Brothers trilogy, not airing on HBO. It's airing on Apple TV Plus on Fridays, although I get it's Thursday nights, being on the West Coast. And I'm loving it. I think it's terrific. I didn't like The Pacific. I didn't like it at the time it came out. I didn't like it on rewatch. I just didn't like it. But I'm a huge Band of Brothers fan, as anyone who listens to the show knows, and I think this is really terrific, even though it's making clear that there was a magic of Band of Brothers that just can't be recaptured.
Yes.
But I find it's utterly compelling, and especially it was the third episode where they go through the whole mission, and it's just terrifying, and you see what the pilots really went through.
This is the second one, because I think that's the one where it came together, because I watched the first one, and I thought, I don't know, and it was that same feeling of Band of Brothers isn't going to happen again, and I need to adjust myself to understand that it isn't that, it isn't going to be. I don't like the lead in these shows being a very recognizable actor because it throws me off, but whatever. That's this Hollywood.
But also, he was cast well before that. It was
either way.
They shot it 4 years ago.
That's fine. That second episode, though, really is the thing where I was like, okay, this is giving me what I wanted. In terms of like let's put us there. Let's see what it feels like as best as you can reproduce, because I think that is one of the real values of those shows, and they went for it, and I really like that.
This is about the B-17, the bombers, and this is even before D-Day. This is prior to D-Day, the bombers who flew daytime missions over Germany, bombing military targets and facilities, and how horrible it goes for those people.
You prefer a military target?
Just name the system.
The British don't. And so what I thought with the most recent episode was that whatever magical alchemy there was with Band of Brothers, it was the acting, it was the writing, it was the characters, it was the way it was constructed. By the time I hit episode 5, I knew every character, their name, something about them. I just knew everyone. Mm-hmm. Whereas I still, on Masters of the Air, I still basically only know the two main guys because they have the same nickname. I don't know any other characters' names. Whatever magic happened with Band of Brothers, you just connected to those characters immediately, and the actors were all iconic, and they're
all
still working
today. Part of that is
the
source material.
Right.
Masters of the Air is more or less a documentary book, whereas Band of Brothers was based largely on David Webster's journals.
I don't see how that's possible, because I read David Webster's journal, and it's hardly anything in the shows in that book.
From what I remember, it's been a while. A lot of that book was written from his perspective, and a lot of it was like, it was also about like, the stories were gotten by talking to the men.
Right.
And I didn't get that sense when I read Masters of the Air, which was very much more about, it was about the experience and it was about the kinds of people who were there. But when they focused on a person, it tended to be an officer, somebody more in charge, not so much the, the grunts as you got further back in the plane, and very much about the tactics and strategy of the thing from an overhead view, meaning that the daylight bombing as opposed to the traditional nighttime bombing, and spoiler, none of it's very effective. they missed a lot more than they hit, but they scared the shit out of people, which helped the the land invasion.
Even though I don't know the names of the characters, I still think it's incredibly compelling I think it's really well done. I think it makes the pilots look cool as shit. There's one point where they're like walking across the tarmac in their like hats and their furry collar jackets. And I was like, fuck, they look cool.
They do.
What they're doing is terrifying. Some good casting. They seem like they're casting younger to make it more realistic. They're not shying away from mustaches this time. Everyone's got a mustache, which was more common in the 40s than you see in other shows usually.
Also, the pilots did want to be more dashing. And like, I don't know if this will come up, but like in the real, at that base, like Clark Gable was one of the pilots. Jimmy Stewart was one of the, they were there. And so there was sort of that, you know, that dashing sort of Hollywood thing was
that
literally
that hasn't come up, but I did know that. Like Gable was a pilot. Stewart was on the bombing squad. William Wyler was shooting movies out of this.
Like Clark Gable insisted on like hanging out with the guys and like they would go out together and like, you know, women and he was a very good guy to have on your crew. It turns out
he did pretty well at the bars.
Yeah, he did. And if you were just with him, that helped too. And, you know, they had a rough life. So, you know, go for it.
The production values are terrific.
Yeah.
Apple's clearly spending a lot of money on this. I think it's been really great. Again, small realizations aside, it's done a really good job of showing why you don't want to be on a plane in war any more than you want to be in a tank or in a submarine or anything else that you could get trapped in.
In many ways, it's much worse. There's a bit at the, it's probably in the second episode where like he takes his glove off and he grabs the gun and Lindsay goes, did he just burn himself? And I was like, no, froze.
He froze to it. Yeah. It was so cold up there.
Yeah. It was always miserable. Really miserable.
It's really, really good. And it's Playtone. It's Tom Hanks. It's the same. It's all the same people. John Orloff is the guy who wrote some of the best episodes of Band of Brothers. He's writing or co-writing all of them. Mm-hmm. Kerry Joji Fukunaga from the first season of True Detective is directed a lot of the
Fukunaga.
Episodes.
Yeah.
It's funny because this is. I just had an idea if maybe we'll do this next month on next month's episode. But this is currently at the top of my haven't started watching list.
Mm.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Which as of right now is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 shows long. And maybe next month we could talk about our list of things we haven't started watching yet that we'd like to if we had a minute of time to ourselves.
So Connor, the non-parent, is like, yeah, sure, whatever.
I've watched it
all. No, but is that a good idea, though? Because I'm sure we all have a list of things that we were like, we want to get to.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's a short discussion. Yeah.
I still have things I like to watch. I just don't, you know, you can't watch everything.
Yeah,
I will say this, Josh. My last point is that last week's episode, which coincided with the big rainstorm we got in Los Angeles, during the midst of a giant, stressful firefight, there the Luftwaffe is attacking, things are blowing up. That's when the rumbling of thunder came through.
Nice.
At the same exact moment, I got wide-eyed. My wife got wide-eyed. We looked at each other. We paused because you're so intense on the scene, and we're like, "Is the bombing? Has it started?" Because it was so perfectly timed with the fight on the screen. It was. Intense. It's a good show. It's a very
good magic
show.
Moment when life crosses over into
yes.
Yeah.
Let's go to Lawman, and I checked this. It's Lawmen Bass Reeves, which is weird and incongruous. Well,
that lets them do more shows about someone else.
Be a series,
Lawmen.
Yeah.
This one's about Bass Reeves.
Oh yeah, no, I figured that. Lawmen. So this one's only six episodes too. Another fact I was really pleased to get to. I'm four in. This what's his name? Sheridan. Tyler Sheridan.
He's
the guy. There used to be film moguls, and now there are TV moguls. You know, you talked about, what's his name before? You were just talking.
Ryan Murphy,
right? And then he's that guy, and then there's Tyler Sheridan, and they all have these different little worlds that they control, and it appears that Sheridan's been the first person in forever to be like, I'm going to make Western shows, and they're all going to be accepted, and I can do as many as I want, and people will watch them, and it's the weirdest thing. I really enjoyed... Is it 1883? 1883. I did not make it too far into 1923. Lawman Bass Reeves appealed to me very much, and I'm really enjoying it.
David Oyelowo
really disappearing into a character where I forget it is that actor, because that actor
really
to me, I recognize him when he's in things, and he's a good actor. He's fine, but he plays this with such a sort of combination, like he's a former slave. But he has authority, and so you watch him over the course of things, like go from being deferential to recognizing his power, but sort of never losing track of either thing. And it's very interesting to watch. I'm really enjoying that aspect. Then the other thing is, I was kind of surprised by, although I guess I shouldn't be, sort of the number of cameos, not cameos, but the number of great actors who have parts in this as you go through it. You'll be watching and then Barry Pepper sort of is in the first episode, and then Donald Sutherland, and was it Dennis Quaid?
Dennis Quaid,
who seemed less old in this. I don't know how long ago they shot it. I don't know, because he was looking pretty haggard. They're not quite one and done stories, but we're moving through time pretty quickly. It's just a good Western show.
The only negative I really have is that at 6, it feels too short. Mm-hmm. It feels like they're really cramming stuff in and moving quickly because they only have 6 episodes to tell this guy's, not life story. You don't go through his entire life, but there's a lot to say. Like you said, he was a slave who was forced to fight for the Confederacy in the Civil War, escaped, was then freed at the end of the war, and then became one of the first black deputy U.S. marshals in the country. It feels like it deserves like a full 10 episodes or something. 6 feels like it's short, but I thought it was really good. I thought he's terrific in it.
Yeah, it's what I wanted it to be. I'm good with that. Finally, I just finished up the most recent season, and I keep thinking they can't keep making this For All Mankind. I know I talked about that on the All Media show, but I hadn't talked about the last season. This is the 5th season, and what we have is we are in the early 2000s, and the show is it's a speculative future or speculative history show. So basically, I've said this before: the Russians get to the moon before Neil Armstrong. And everything spins off from there. So now you imagine us, however many years later, 40 years later, in a world, and they've colonized Mars, and there's an industry going on there, and there's all these politics involved, and like the technology has evolved to the point where we have a lot of the things that we have now, but not some of the other things that we have now. Like there's all these little choices that they put in the background, which sort of let you know how the world developed. But my main thesis about this season is it is the most Battlestar Galactica of all of the seasons so far. You guys, it's been a while since you talked about Battlestar Galactica, but one of those episodes could turn on a dime.
Sure.
A character could make a decision that almost seems from out of nowhere. It's almost unbelievable. And then everything is thrown into chaos and people choose up sides and you're going, what is he doing that for? And it's a little more cartoony than the other ones have been. And I think it's because we're at a speculative future now. Who's to say? And like they really are leaning into character drama in places where before it was a little easier to sort of just tell a story about what happened. I don't know if it's better, but it is really interesting. And as I said, it really gave me that Battlestar Galactica feeling. Ronald D. Moore is a co-runner of this show. And there's other writers from Battlestar Galactica on it.
What is the year that it ends on?
It's hard to keep track. I think it's like 2003 to 7 or something like that, but don't quote me on that.
Do you think they're going to do more?
No, like there's at least one more season.
What I've heard was that like all the previous seasons have been leading up to this season, basically.
I can see that. I mean, but they are, but yeah. That's any story. Like, yes.
Right, no, but like it was all setting up, so now they're telling the story. Like,
So what was interesting is that the first season especially, the thing that drew me to it is that so many of the people in it were real people. Not unlike From the Earth to the Moon, but things just went a little different. So Neil Armstrong was in it, and not Ed Harris, but the character that he played in Apollo 13. Like all those people, Gene Kranz, and now none of those people are in it anymore. And you sort of got to know all the fictional people that they put in. A lot of those people are dead now. Right. But there's a Soviet Russia, and there's a big part of it, and one of the main characters, like she's been through some shit. She at the beginning of the show, she was like Wernher von Braun's assistant. They all found out he was a Nazi. And in this world, they didn't keep him around. They were like, nope, you're out. Because in the real world, like he was on the Disney Sunday Night Show. He was with Kennedy, and let's not mince words. Wernher von Braun was a Nazi. His rocket factories employed slave labor. He knew perfectly well what was going on. And then he came here and he helped design our rockets out of Huntsville, Alabama. In that show, they kicked him out. But the woman who was his assistant, and she broke from him, she ends up being head of NASA up through the end of last season. And then there's a whole thing that happens and she has to defect to Soviet Russia. And so now she's working for the Russians. That's very Battlestar Galactica. All of a sudden, President Rosalyn is doing something completely different. And it was like that.
Question
so it made
for
it
you.
Really fun. Yes.
If next season ends revealing the Cylons, and this has all just been a prequel to Battlestar, how would you feel?
Yes. Yes. Connor, yes.
That'd be awesome.
Well, because I've
Do
also
you remember that miniseries.
The, yes,
she breaks that baby's neck, and you're like, "Oh, it's on."
I've also heard that that was so good. I've also heard that that this is like a spiritual predecessor to a Expanse future. Right. In that, you know, take away the you know, the alternate timeline and the Soviet, not Soviet, whatever. But like, this is showing the progress it takes to get to the Expanse, which is where Mars is colonized and they're on the belt and all that sort of stuff. Right.
Like, maybe.
But it's I see the latter. Right.
Yeah. Like, I think anybody who's a fan of sort of hard sci-fi and likes sort of space exploration as sort of the path forward, you know, it all sort of goes that way. We all loved Seven Eves. You know, it's just that idea of like, we can all work together and go towards something, you know, and every time it falls to shit because we're humans.
Right.
You know, technology, and then it gets commodified, and then it ends up being, you know, there's a bunch of workers who are just working a shitty job. It just happens to be in space.
Right.
A lot of that.
Launching question: what is your favorite hard sci-fi property, film, book, whatever? If you in the hard sci-fi genre,
none of the soft sci-fi bullshit.
I mean, right. I would say Seven Eves, the book, is probably my favorite.
Which book?
Seven Eves book.
What one?
Seven Eves.
Oh, Seven Eves. I think you said the 70s. I'm sorry. Like, no, a book from the 70s. Yeah, 70s.
Like, the Seven Eves. Which? The book. Which book? Seven Eves?
Yeah, no, 70s is, 70s is, I see that. That's very good. Yeah.
I really love, I love The Martian.
Yeah, Martian's very good.
And I was going to say the movie The Martian, but I read the book first, you know, where right. You guys were formed. But, you know, as far as I just like that sort of long term, you live in that world forever and then that time jump in that, which it all tracked.
Tying back to True Detective with Jodie Foster McConaughey, Contact, I always think is a fantastic film.
Good
fantastic
film.
Fantastic hard sci-fi
film. Book too.
Yeah.
Really great book.
Yeah.
Good There's stuff. A lot of great hard sci-fi. So in the very limited time we have left, we went like 2.5 times longer than we normally do on that segment. I guess real quickly, we're going to run through the Best Picture nominees. The Oscars are about a month away. And normally what we do on the show is after the nominees are announced, we do this show and we rank them and therefore pick our favorite film of the year.
Rankings.
From the
rankings.
I just have to edit. Interstellar tied with Seven Eves.
Okay.
Interstellar, right.
I love that. Anyway, go ahead.
So here are the 10 nominees in alphabetical order, so there's no preference here. American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. Those are the 10 nominees for Best Picture.
Josh, how many have you seen of those?
5.
Okay, ooh. I have seen 5 as well.
I've seen 9.
9, yeah.
Wait, maybe I've only seen 4.
I will in all reality probably see one. I'll probably see one more before the Oscars, so I'll get to 6, I think.
Yeah, I'll see mine before.
Yeah, so that taints it, right? And I'll come out and say, like, so I have not seen Zone of Interest, Past Lives, Anatomy of Fall, or American Fiction. I likely will see American Fiction this week or next. I'm going to try to see Anatomy of Fall, Past Lives, or Zone of Interest. I don't know how to prioritize which one of the three to see, but I feel like I've seen the ones that...
I think of those, you would enjoy Past Lives the most.
Past Lives? All right, so I'll rank that in there.
Prioritize that one.
Okay. I do find it very interesting that both Anatomy of Fall and Zone of Interest have the same actress.
They do, yes.
Sandra Huller, yeah, which I thought was very interesting. But neither here nor there. Okay, cool. So, Josh, which ones have you seen?
Barbie, Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Oppenheimer.
So 4.
And, you know, like of those, I've never heard of Anatomy of a Fall. I want to see American Fiction very much.
Yeah.
I'm ambivalent about Maestros. I don't really care about Poor Things. Past Lives looks interesting, and I have no idea what the Zone of Interest is. But I know what my Zone of Interest is.
Zone of Interest is a Nazi film, World War II. Hmm.
Yeah, that one's up your alley, actually, I think.
Not all Nazi movies are up my alley. Let me rephrase that. No.
So.
And Connor, which one haven't you seen yet?
I haven't seen Poor Things because I really hated The Lobster. And so I've been putting off seeing Poor Things. But I'm going to see it. I'm going to. I want to see it. I'm just one away. I'll go see it. But I'm not rushing out, but I have to.
Yeah. I've seen Oppenheimer, Holdovers, Killers, Flower Moon, Maestro, Barbie, Poor Things, and that's it. And then I will likely see American Fiction.
So let's rank them then.
I just inadvertently read them in my ranking. But
okay,
so
what
I,
was
if
your
I,
ranking
if I,
again?
If I rank them from the bottom to the top, I would rank them from the bottom to the top. In terms of Best Picture,
yep.
Poor Things, Barbie, Maestro, Killers, Holdovers, Oppenheimer. So Oppenheimer is my pick for Best Picture. Holdovers and Killers of the Flower Moon is like millimeters between the two. And really what nudged Holdovers over Killers of the Flower Moon is just that like Holdovers was a delightful experience where Killers was a marathon and I was exhausted at the end, right? And it was still great and still really good. But Holdovers like got that warm and fuzzy feeling, whereas, you know, Killers was just kind of like, oh, the majesty. And then I think Maestro, Barbie, Poor Things all kind of like all have individual things about them that make them special and make them unique. But, you know, none more so than I think Oppenheimer is just like a classic Best Picture in my mind.
Is that your favorite film of the year since you're ranking it first?
Yep.
Josh?
These are all fairly close. I really liked every one of these movies. I'm going to go from bottom to top. The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, and here Barbie Oppenheimer.
Ooh.
I really liked Barbie and Oppenheimer in two different ways, but a lot. I mean, Oppenheimer, the only thing I'm giving at the edge is that we talked about this. Like, it's a feature film of the grandest scale, and that is a rare thing. And to be able to see it on a gigantic screen with that sound was an experience that is probably slightly more valuable to me than what was a very well shot, written, and acted comedy satire about society. Yeah.
All right.
The reason The Holdovers would be last on it was, for me, I think that's a movie that, oddly enough, it got much better as it went on. For a little while, I was like, I don't know if this is that good. And then by the end, it is sort of built up enough steam that I was like, that's fantastic, you know?
Yeah.
So, interesting. I'm going to go with, from the bottom to the top, Incomplete is obviously Poor Things. Number 9, Maestro. Number 8, Anatomy of a Fall. Number 7, The Zone of Interest. Number 6, American Fiction. Number 5, Past Lives. Number 4, Barbie. And then Ron and I have the same top 3. 3, Killers of the Flower Moon. 2, The Holdovers. And 1, Oppenheimer. I think that's where I'm at. I've switched this around a couple of times.
I switched it around before I said it.
We talked about this on our hangout with the patrons. I had Past Lives and American Fiction swapped. And for a while, I had Killers of the Flower Moon at 2.
Yeah, I mean, like, talk to me tomorrow. I could probably knock Killers up to 2 as well, too. Yeah.
Sure. So. I think the main thing here, and we talked about this on the hangout, it might have been before you guys showed up, but if anything, this list shows it was a stellar year for films.
Yeah, it was
even
good.
Even if there are fewer films and people aren't going as much and the overall output's down, the top, the cream, was really strong. This was a really strong year. Almost all the movies I saw in the top 10 are terrific.
And was it like really like the first like real coming out of the pandemic year?
Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, even though some of these movies were shot,
yeah,
they said it would take like 2 years because movie development takes a while.
Yeah. And that's the bummer, is that now the next year or two is going to be affected by the strike and all that, you know.
Right.
But
we're back in the hole.
Neither here nor there. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, like, it was like, there are a lot of, like, and you can make a case, I mean, at least for all the movies I saw, like, you can make a case for why these are all nominated and to be considered.
Yeah.
We don't have, like, a lot of thematically similar films or anything like that. Like, they're just, you know, really kind of fascinating, the depth and breadth of the past year of movies, so.
Yeah, I mean, even Maestro, which I had on the bottom, I thought was worthwhile and interesting and really well made. So, like, all of these movies are really well made, interesting films.
Yep.
I saw all of them but Maestro and Past Lives in the theaters. Not a ton of movies, but all the movies I saw were quite good in the theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward. I think it's a strong year. And I think Oppenheimer is far and away the best picture. And I think it's odds on it's going to win the best picture, not Oscar.
Yeah.
Sagman, Bennett, Robbins, Oppenheimer, and Taft. Every time someone says it. Sagman, Bennett, Robbins, Oppenheimer, and Taft. If you know that, you're old.
That is the ranking of the best picture nominees. I think you're right, Ron. Look how different these films are. They're very different, and they're all really good.
Which is very different than how we described the films over the past 3-4 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think it was last year, but the year before, it was just like, there's nothing here. Yep. Like, there was one year where it was just nothing here.
That was the streaming year was rough.
Right. The streaming year was rough. Yeah.
What was the Frances McDormand movie?
Nomadland.
Yeah. Nomadland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, have you even thought about that movie again?
No one has. And you know, Frances McDormand is a goddamned American treasure genius, but no.
Chloe Zhao is really good. She's really good shooting films, but that movie just didn't register with me at all. That was a bad year for movies, obviously, for all the obvious reasons.
Hmm.
All right, well, and at least Ron and I are very excited for the Oscars in a month, so we'll be looking forward to watching those. Well,
so the Screen Actors Guild Awards are going to be on Netflix at the end of this month.
That's right. I did know that. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I do enjoy the jockeying of who gets, you know, all the lead up awards and how that does and everything. But yeah, but I do think, I mean, like barring, I mean, you never know. I mean, like something like Barbie or something like Holdovers could sneak up and take it from Oppenheimer, I think. Or even Poor Things.
They might
things.
Have like, to give it to Barbie because of the director problem.
It is the ranked choice voting for the best picture. So that always throws things into a slightly bit of chaos.
And that's why something like Poor Things could squeak through too, you know?
True.
Yep.
Especially the last couple of years since they expanded the Academy and has a lot more younger and diverse international members. You know, you had Parasite and Moonlight and films that traditionally wouldn't have won Best Picture.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. And if you're a patron, again, at patreon.com/fanboy, we have our yearly Oscars pool. We do it every year.
But we got to do that.
We Thank all you. Join up and have an Oscars pool for bragging rights. There's no prize, but bragging rights, which are important.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's fun.
I'm not good at seeing movies. I'm not good at recognizing which movies are going to win. I come in last every year and I hate it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is that like it's the Oscar pool or the Oscar voting that you get two kind of people. Yeah. The people who are like picking, this is what I want to win, right? And then
that's
then
not
there's
the point
the,
of the pool.
Then there's the anticipating, well, how is the Academy going to vote? Like that's, yeah.
See, that, so. The thing is like, I understand that, but I have no idea how the Academy votes, nor do I care to put any thought into it. And then half the time I'm just like, I don't know. See,
I start calling all members, you know, around January. I start making a lot of phone calls.
Just a poll, just
a temperature check. Just a temperature check.
Who are you, and why do you call me every year?
Every year,
just ma'am, real quick. What do you think?
You can't
best
see me right now, but I have a fedora with a little card in the hat band.
So it's press.
And I'm going to need you to answer these questions.
It's more legitimate than the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. All right, so that's
that
it.
That was funny.
That's it for this week's show. Thank you for listening, as always. And thanks for being a patron. If you are one, you unlocked this show. You also unlocked our other Splode shows, the Talk Splode and the Book Splode shows. All those shows were unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/fanboy. Consider being one today. That's how the shows keep getting made. It's how the lights stay on. And we do appreciate it because none of us want to live in the night country. We like having lights. But again, every week you can listen to Josh and I and sometimes special guests talk about the week's new comics on iFanboy.com and the Pick of the Week show. You can listen to Ron every week on Android Faithful. I keep wanting to say all about Android. It keeps starting to come out of my tongue, and I have to keep knocking
it back.
No,
I know. It's muscle memory. I will say, though, while I'm doing Android Faithful, I do have a hard time with doing the outro. I'm like, email us a contact that I fa- oh, damn it.
Still, like, huh?
There's still such a muscle memory to going into all the iFanboy outro stuff.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
Yeah, it should. It torments
it does.
Me.
well, hold on.
We'll be back next month with another show. Maybe we'll be talking about the shows we need to watch that Ron mentioned earlier.
I think that'd be a fun conversation to be like, what's on the like, what's like the to read pile for in comics? What's on the to watch list?
The way that makes that compelling is at the end of it, everyone has to get assigned something to watch, and they have to watch at least one episode before the next.
That's
episode.
Fair. I'll do that. I'm in on it. I like that.
You don't have to commit to the whole thing, but you have to watch at least the first episode of the thing.
That's cool.
That the other two guys assigned to you from your list.
I'm down with that.
All right. We'll do that. That'll be next month's show.
We're producing the show live on the show.
that's what people have done. That's producing. You don't understand.
Don't give me an Oscar for that.
There I am. 2 a.m. Coke to the gills. Haven't even read the treatment.
We'll be back next month. And until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
Josh Flanagan.
I remember when we were driving in your car. Speed so fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us. Your arm felt nice, wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.